there's to be a secret out of the past.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
If you like radio that painstakingly stitches together seemingly unlike music in delightfully unpredictable ways, then check out WGXC's Overlooked, the second and fourth Tuesday of each month, just after the new news. You'll hear underheard and overlooked music, ancient to future, from every corner of the Omniverse. That's Overlooked on 90.7 WGXC.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Janice of Coxsackie, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Turn out on Thursday, July 31st at 7 p.m. to the Avalon Lounge for Breaking the Algorithm IRL, a new monthly series presented by Wave Farms WGXC as part of our Local Waves initiative. Part conversation led by Mike Amari of Chosen Family and part DJ set by a WGXC volunteer, the series highlights local artists, musicians, venue owners and bookers, and record label owners. This month's event features a discussion with local musician and soundmaker Sarah Van Buren, SVB, and a DJ set by DJ Christopher Michael Hefner, entry by donation. Check the WGXC community calendar for more info. See you there.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Thank you.
This is Wave Farm Radio Director Meredith Cooey. You're about to hear a recording of a Zoom call I had with Abigail Simon and Yvonne Short of the Solstice Sisters Collective to talk about their pop-up exhibition, Apophenia, that's currently up at 258 Main Street in Saugerties. We also talked about the scheduled events for the rest of the show. Hello, Abigail, and hello, Yvonne.
Hello, Meredith.
Actually, I'm going to do it one by one instead. So I'm going to, okay. Hello, Abigail.
Hello, Meredith.
And hello, Yvonne.
Hello, Meredith.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today about your exhibition that is now open in Saugerties, a pop-up exhibition called Apophenia. Love to hear about this. So, Abigail, you are the curator of the exhibition, and we'll talk about what you mean by curating. But can you just give us some, you know, basic info about the exhibition?
Well, the basic info about the exhibition is that we are in a pop-up gallery at 258 Main Street in Saugerties. It used to be the Swivel Gallery, and before that it was the Key Bank. And we are there until the 27th of July, and hours are 12 to 6. And the exhibition is about what it means to be a feeling human in a world that is dominated by capitalist impulses and the need to buy.
And so this show is curated by you, but it also is this sort of collaborative effort by the Solstice Sisters Collective. So will you talk a bit more about the collective and your curatorial process?
Well, I think maybe a good idea would be if Yvonne would just introduce the idea of what the Solstice Sisters is.
Great.
Sure. So basically, I think that it's the Solstice Sisters came about because Abigail and myself and our friend Dari and others started really questioning what it means to kind of come together and be in community, and how we could kind of, we didn't have to wait for anyone to invite us in, that we could invite ourselves in. We could kind of self-select ourselves.
As artists.
Yes, as artists, as, you know, just individuals. And so what happened was Abigail put out a call. She just sent an email out and she said, hey, you know, I would love for us to kind of come together and be in community every week, every other week as artists and talk about our work and our ideas. And some people said yes. And that's, we became known as the Solstice Sisters, those who self-selected themselves to take part and be in community with others. What have I left out, Abigail?
Well, what I would say that you left out is that the Solstice Sisters grew out of another series of cohorts that when I was first moved up to the Catskills and I was really feeling isolated because it was lockdown and, you know, maybe the end of lockdown, but I didn't know, I had no one in my pod. I had like Marina and like some other people in my pod, but I was very lonely. And I saw on Instagram, Yvonne, who I did not know, put out a call for women who wanted to make art and meet for 8 weeks on Zoom and make a project and then have a tiny show in, you know, somewhere unspecified. And it was the self-selecting artist protocol. And the first 10 people would be chosen. And I was one of those first 10 people. And it really changed my life because there was a kind of hierarchical and competitive edge to so many other cohorts that I had been in, from art school to gallery situations to even, like, you know, collaborations with other artists, that was entirely absent to this. And I really felt so excited by it, and the experience of doing it was so uplifting. It was like, it's just a very different thing. There was no one that could be rejected. There was no one that would be criticized. It wasn't about being good enough or knowing enough people, or, you know, it was just, all you had to do was like show up at the page, as, you know, like Julia Cameron would say, but, you know, you just had to show up and bring it. And that was that, but that was like limited. So we did a couple of cohorts like that with people, like a kind of growing circle of people.
Yes, we did. And,
yes. And one of them was this wonderful banner project that toured around the country for
2 years.
Yeah, like 2 years. And everyone was not only responsible for making their work and, you know, sort of suspending judgment on each other about like aesthetics or whatever, but also everyone was responsible for generating a venue, for finding and for being the, you know, like making it happen that the work would be present. And these were big banners. They were like, what were they, 5 foot by 5 foot, Yvonne?
Yeah. And we also had to show up and be kind and generous and caring with one another. And that was, I think, really at its core, what I think has kind of continued to propagate us, showing up for one another, right, being kind and being generous.
And we had reached a lapse in those cohorts. And, you know, Yvonne wasn't doing one right then because she had a big project happening that was her own. And so, and it was winter time, which I am a person for the long winter, that somnam, you know, that kind of sleeping gestation time can be very lonely. And so I sent out this call on, actually, and so, within minutes, someone that I didn't know, who is now very dear to me, had responded, which is Colleen Ray Smiley. Minutes. And several other people that I did know, or they were friends of friends. And by the end of the day, the cohort was full.
See, I thought you've known Colleen for so many years, so it just goes to show how strong this bond was.
She just popped in.
Yeah.
And we were going to meet for just the solstice to the, you know, from December 21st to March 21st. But March 21st came around, and we were like, this is so, like, generative and supportive, and many interesting things are happening. So now it's been, I think we're on, at this point now, week 136 and of meeting, you know, every other week, every week. Sometimes there's an emergency, sometimes there's not. People come in, they go out, they're free flowing. And but there isn't, there's no possibility of judgment or rejection. And I've watched people grow in the course of it, you know, even people that are accomplished artists explore, like take risks. One of the other artists in the show is quite accomplished, but she says this is a place where she can bring her artist risk-taking behavior and find new things and find excitement and, you know, find joy without the pressure of judgment.
And I think I think the other thing is that I think of everyone there as an accomplished artist, I think, because it's of our, yes, ability to suspend those, you know, judgment on anyone.
Yes.
We are all accomplished. And so I think that that's also a way that sometimes people come to the table and you go, oh, this person has, you know, gotten these grants or this funding or in these museums. But I think in our cohort, we try to kind of move away from that language.
Right. Within the cohort, possible. Absolutely. I was being sloppy and just trying to sort of communicate in a shorthand, but yes, absolutely.
So this was a December solstice back in what year was that?
22.
And then what year, Yvonne, was the cohort that you were doing?
The original cohort, I believe, started maybe in 2020, late 2020 or early 2021. So that was the first cohort, because myself and an artist, Daria Darish, we were part of, where Daria was a founding member of AIR, and we had started, and I was in AIR, and that's a women's nonprofit collective that's been around for 50 years. And we were starting to have these, we were having deep conversations about what did it mean to be an artist? What did it mean to be in a museum? What is a museum? What is a gallery? And that's how all of this kind of started.
I'm thinking right now, I'm just going to say a little about my personal experience. I was looking through some of my old writing yesterday, and I came across this short essay that I wrote that's called something like, "What's an Artist to Do When She's Not Making Art Anymore?"
That's interesting.
And so, like, talking to y'all about this, you know, I don't think that that's a coincidence, but, you know, I really like this whole, like, concept and model that you have for continuing on. So do you meet, okay, you said you meet, like, every other week. And what happens when you're meeting?
Hard to say. We don't know. Whatever needs to happen. I mean, would you agree with that, Yvonne? Like, it's like sometimes we talk about, like right now, we talk about politics sometimes because we're anxious.
Yeah, and we're very supportive. So we meet each other where we are, as opposed to kind of to anything else. We meet each other where we are. Sometimes before a meeting, somebody might say, oh, I'm going to be in a show, or I'm doing this or that. I mean, many of us, you know, are, you know, creating work, all, you know, in a variety of different places. And so we may have something that we want to discuss, something that maybe we feel that our sisters could kind of get behind and help us to talk about in a way that will help one another. And so, and it really is, what is it that the individual is looking for on that day? And sometimes we'll have something and we'll say, well, on this date, we're doing X, Y, or Z. And so, and then we'll do that thing. But it's very open.
Yeah. And what I would say also, I think is really important is that people or, you know, each other, people have had, especially like this past year, a lot of people have had personal disasters. Like, we have artists from all over the country. And one of them was in Tampa, and she lost her house, and she isn't able to come, but she comes once in a while, and it means a lot to her to know that we're there. She lost her house entirely. She lost everything except her pets.
Wow.
You know, and another woman who is in the show, Heather O'Brien Takahashi, she has a beautiful film about water, like water rights in Lebanon. And she fell down 50 stairs earlier this year. And the notion of the cohort and that we're out here, she has a lot of physical damage.
Wow.
Means a lot to her just to be able to participate when she can. And
And so the cohort kind of came together and they got her film, Order Is Never Still, and they put that film in place so that people who come to the show will be able to see it. So we have each other's backs, and that's an example. And not just kind of putting the work up, but also helping to fund some of the things that were going on in her life because of, you know, some of the things, you know, because of what had
medical
happened.
Emergency. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and also, like, we have come together, you know, we've been meeting a long time. So this is actually the third time that we're coming together to bring work. But the experiment of this occasion, there's a few different experiments going on. One of them is, this is the first time that we've invited outsiders to come and look with us. Like, we're functioning like showing artists, exhibiting artists. What we've done in the past is we've made these gifts to each other of these shows that are very short-lived, but people have traveled great distances to do it. And the other experiment that's happening here is that this is up for 2 weeks and there's like a duration element. And I think that's really an interesting part of the experience for us. But at the bottom, this is, we do this for each other and we're inviting our friends and our community in to come and join us in this experience.
Can you talk a bit about how this exhibition came together?
Yes. One of the artists, Elena Grossman, is she's an avid reader, and she, for a number of reasons that have to do with like current events, she brought the book Pattern Recognition to the group and was like, I would like to do the experiment, we've never done this before, of reading something together. So we read the book and we met, and many people were very excited by certain things in the book. Like it felt very resonant. And the book is written in 2003. It takes place in a kind of dystopic post 9/11, like the looming tragedy in the book is 9/11. And we feel very much, I mean, it feels to me personally like that we're living in the shadow of looming tragedy right now. Whether it's, you know, you can take your pick from like one from column A, two from column B. But so we decided to make this work together around this text of the William Gibson. And about halfway through the process of people kind of discussing what their influences were, I became really interested in, you know, because to me, William Gibson is very masculine. Like he's a very masculine writer, and he has a lot of female characters, but they're dimensioned a very particular way. And I thought it was really interesting to have women interpreting and sort of vining around his universe. And what I was interested, you know, pattern recognition is a broad concept that has to do with, you know, mathematics. It has to do with science. It has to do with making, you know, mixtures and art making. But apophenia is seeing the patterns that aren't there. And it very often is something that is ascribed to like schizophrenia or mental illness, because, or like paranoia. But, it has to do with surveillance very often. But to me, apophenia also is what artists do. There's like a kind of positive aspect because artists impart new patterns that are invisible to other seers, you know, and I thought that was a really good, like a kind of blanket to throw over our collective process, because a lot of these are kind of, they're very left-handed interpretations, they're lunar, they're feminized interpretations of aspects of the work.
I really love this concept, this word, apophenia. I didn't know this word before, and it brings me deep relief.
Actually. Can you say more?
It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, just speaking from personal experience as an artist and a researcher, you know, my dissertation brought concepts from all over the map together. And my dissertation advisors were always like, I don't know why this works, but it does, you know, like seemingly unrelated things from different universes.
Exactly.
And I always thought it was exactly. Like a problem with me. So I really like this way that you're talking about the exhibition. And I'm, you know, what it means or how it is to be an artist.
I mean, I think to be an artist, you have to see, like, I mean, and also to be like a gifted scientist or a gifted maybe anything, you have to be able to see the patterns that are invisible to others, you know, or the potential for pattern, you know, signals, you know, you have to embrace signals. And, but there are like many kind of threads in the novel, and there's a lot of, the main character is a cool hunter, you know, which I guess in that time of, you know, the sort of shopping unit, you know, that time of the internet, this mm-hmm. idea of like influencers was, you know, a lot more barbed or whatever. But she has an allergy to logos, which I really relate to. And
the character does in the novel?
The main character, Casey, has an allergy to logos. But underneath, so there's a lot of elements of like capitalism and, you know, kind of, you know, industrial espionage and, you know, kind of like double crossing. And but underneath all of it is this kind of valorized human, you know, the most important, most desirable thing in the entire novel turns out to be generated by human trauma, by like real pain, you know, by someone who has genuine experience and is not generating the thing that she's generating for gain. She's making these images because she has to, because she's processing her own experience. And because of that, that gives her work the kind of authority that all of these kind of cool hunters and, captains of industry want. But it's not for sale. And I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a description of the book that someone else might give. But I think that's that part of it was very, that river, you know, I've been describing it as the river of grief that runs under our planet and kind of unites us as this kind of deep, unavoidable loss that's part of living. And it in William Gibson, because I haven't read him in a long time, but I don't remember him being emotive like that. And it seemed very feminine to me.
If you are just tuning in, this is Meredith Cooey, and I am speaking with Abigail Simon and Yvonne Short, who are part of the exhibition Apophenia, curators, artists in the exhibition, and part of the Solstice Sisters Collective. What you're talking about makes me think of care. And
absolutely.
And before we got on the mic, I was asking about, you know, the philosophy of curating the exhibition and organizing this. And I think you said something like shepherding in. And curating, to me, you know, the word comes from care. And so I'm wondering about that. And if that plays a role. And you also, you know, the two of you have talked so much about care for the other artists in your collective, right? And holding space for whatever people's experiences are, supporting and all of that. And I'm wondering about that philosophy of curating and organizing and presenting.
Well, I think I would like to say something briefly about the actual curating, but then I'd like, Yvonne, would you like to say something about care in general, like this notion of care?
Yeah, I think I can. Let's mm-hmm. see where we go.
So, I mean, this is not, I don't feel like the curator sitting in judgment, making choices and selections, and whose no is final or whose yes is final. I feel like my privilege in this situation has been to create a space for us to come into. I found, I wanted it to be in my village. I'm a Socratesian, and I wanted it to be in my community and to make a space inside my physical community for my my soul community was very important. And to help to support my sisters in the kind of journey that they had to make, you know, some physical, some, you know, some people were hitting steps and walls because this was, you know, it's like people feel like when you're making work in response to a novel, sometimes people exclude, you know, perfectly wonderful things. Like there's a piece that's one of, I have to say, any piece that I talk about, I'm going to say that's one of my favorites because I really love them all. But it's like I was helping people finding place for their existing works or their existing lines of inquiry in relation to this novel. And a really good example is Lisa Crafts has these pieces called Stain Boys. And they're a side practice. They're a counter practice that she was doing. They don't look like her known work that's out into the world, but they're literally exquisite. And they're a particular kind of apophenia, which has to do with when you see faces, like in clouds, you know, and she sees faces in New York City sidewalks. And then she photographs them, scans them, and then draws meticulously in charcoal on top of them. And these are like exquisite one-offs. They're not multiples. And she was very hesitant to put them in the show. Even though it's literally apophenia. I was like, Lisa, it's literally apophenia. But it doesn't have to do with the characters, with William Gibson, but it has to do with the way we see.
I like that openness, right? And how it can manifest in all sorts of ways. So, I mean, I think of artworks and you know, literature, visual art, sound work, whatever, as, you know, the openings to our own experiences and our own thoughts and our own concepts. So it sounds to me that, I don't know. I like
that. I mean, it totally. And it also has to do, I mean, I think in any situation, a good curator and an artist are working with trust. But I think it's even more, it's very important in this situation. And
also like Lisa Brown's work, The System Is Out to Get Me.
Yeah. Great piece.
That's a great piece, but someone might not necessarily see the correlation at first. And I think that that's, you know, there's an openness and we want to meet everyone where they are in that moment. What is important to them? What are they thinking about? What are they going through? And how, so you might not see direct correlations to every single piece. And I'm not saying you won't with hers, but I am saying that I think part of how this notion of what a curator is kind of was explored within our collective is that it was also a willingness to meet people where they were. And that's part of, I think, care as well. That's a big part of care.
I yes, absolute. Yeah. And I also think that the curator very often in practice is a gatekeeper. And we reject that, like philosophically, we reject that all over our collaborations with each other.
And even with me, because we were having this conversation about, so I have this piece and normally might go on a wood shelf that's white on a white, you know, gallery space, but the work is not. It's on like this kind of orange steel piece that juts up 5 feet. And you know, maybe some curators and maybe even Abigail might have said, well, I really feel like that doesn't belong there. It shouldn't be there. But that's, even if that was the feeling, that's not what happens. It's like, no, I mean, what is it, you know, do what you want. And then later we have a conversation and I say, well, I'm really thinking about consumerism and the juxtaposition of consumerism within the concept of, you know, creating within a community where what we create is not impacting our environment in a negative way. And I want to juxtapose those two things. And then there's like, ah, I see, you know. And so I think that we are constantly in any, I think in any space where there is care, you are willing to listen and you're willing to ask questions and you're willing to be in conversation. And I think that that's really important. And I think that that's what we do together as a collective.
I mean, I would say one of the things, maybe it's a good time, I don't know, Meredith, if it's a good time for Yvonne to say something about her own work, because I did have that question about this structure, but spending time with it, we didn't even have to have a discussion. I saw it. And there was even a secret that I didn't know. But do you want to say something, Yvonne, or
about so I was thinking about patterns, and I was thinking about as an artist how you know, I've installed pieces in many universities, and I'll use steel, and I use all of these other. I was using all of these materials, and I started to ask myself over the last 5 years, you know, how does this, you know, how, even more so, how are the tools, how are the materials that I'm using impacting my community? How are they impacting me? How are they impacting the people who are working with me using these tools, using these materials? And so I started to want to only use materials that, you know, did no harm. So my whole, as anyone who's creating, you have this idea of what you want to create, and you have these materials that you can use. And I think as creators, whether it's, you know, a mathematician, an architect, someone in construction, you have to, you know, at some point you start asking questions, what is the impact of the materials that I'm using on the environment? And not just then what is the impact, but also maybe once you start to realize that, you know, some of us are able to say, well, I want to stop doing that. And that was with what this book was really, I've been on the search. I've been thinking about how I'm creating. And I think recognizing my own role as an artist, as a creator, even if, you know, for those of us out there who may not even, who are just who create, who, whatever it is that you're creating, I wanted to really be cognizant of the tools that I'm using in my practice. And I work with my husband and I work with my daughters. So it's a, we call it the workshop of short, and it's a kind of a community of care that we're working
with. And you
also
work with your beavers.
Yes.
I worked
with beavers.
I mean that in the nicest possible way.
But it's true. I have beavers on my land. There's around 100, I guess it's 60 acres that are abut the property, and then another 30 or 40. So I work with beavers, and I have birds. There's a bobcat on the land. There's coyote, fox, and I incorporate them all into the practice. And whatever I'm creating, I'm really thinking about that. And they become like part of the people who are participating, who are in this practice with me. So for this show, for this exhibition, I created pieces. My husband and I, we tapped our maple trees, and we have syrup, and we made molds out of mud. And traditionally I would be using silicone and other materials, which, you know, have impacts on the environment. So again, it's about me saying, what is my role? What is the pattern that I'm manifesting over and over and over? And how can I, as an individual, you know, maybe make some changes. So making molds out of mud so that when they're done, they literally go back into my creek and keeps moving. And using maple syrup, which comes from the land, which I tap the water, the maple sap from my maple trees. And then my husband and I, we went through the whole arduous process of turning that into actual maple syrup. And then I used it with my husband to create these molds and then to put that syrup in. And we made these words called do no harm. and they come from our maple syrup on our land, and they also come from bird seed. And the idea is when it's done, it goes back into the land, and the birds can eat it, and the maple syrup goes into the water and continues its flow downstream.
And that also meet these little people. The people are the lollipops are people.
Well, we call them like the mud babies, and they have little lollipop heads, which again come from the maple syrup on the land and the mud on the land as well. And then again, those will go back to the land when they're done, and the animals and the ants and everything will be able to tap into them. And it's all just right from the land where I will put it back. And that's like me looking at what is my pattern again, and how can I, you know, change that. And we have a little coffee table that we made, and that coffee table will actually go in my home. And we have two pillows that my daughter stitched together from our work clothes that we have. And those, and we pack them with our other clothes that we had. And that will become the seats for my coffee table, for our coffee table in our home. And the idea of really not going out and buying, but looking all around at what we have and learning, you know, and trying to, for me personally, because everyone is on their own, we're in our own places at this time, but for me personally and for my family, about us thinking about what does it mean to care for ourselves. When we care for ourselves, we try not to use toxic materials. When we care for our environment, we know that whatever we use will go into the water, will go into the mud, will go in and actually come back up, because, you know, we have a pond and we have a creek, and these are flow downstream. We have a plants that we grow, that we cut, that we give to our community. We have vegetables that are grown on the land. We have 100, maybe it's 1,000 blueberry bushes. So everything impacts. And so really thinking about that in our practice and our patterns, and really trying to make our own personal changes.
And then we have, I want to give a shout out to some of the other works in the show, artists. We've mentioned some, but we haven't mentioned several. And one is Darlene Ferris Labar, who is an artist that works across many digital practices. And she does use, she is the head of a department in the University of Pennsylvania, or Eastern Pennsylvania, but she, so she does use styrofoam, and she has a lenticular image that's in the show and some things that she has 3D printed. But she's talking about the intersection between like the natural world and the digital world, in the sense of like recognizability. So that the average person can recognize like thousands of corporate logos, but they can't recognize a native plant from like where they are. They can't identify it or describe, you know, how it's used or where it came from. So, you know, she's kind of writing, like trying to imprint some of the natural world on the unnatural materials. And it's a very beautiful piece. Colleen Ray Smiley, aforementioned, made a very, in many ways, a literal nod to the, she's a textile artist, and she works in quilts and assemblage. And she made a kind of literal nod to some of the scenes and descriptions in the novel, but to the point where somebody walked in, the other day, they walked through the door and they said, oh, look, there's the Bibendum, which is the name of the original Michelin man. Marina Zirko, who is a wonderful art animator known primarily for extremely dense digital animations that are very heavily programmed, and, you know, there's a giant, she has a giant screen that is like, it's like the largest screen I've ever seen up at the Whitney right now. But she took Amazon boxes and painted them with creatures from her dreams, essentially, like creatures from her nightmares. And let me see, am I forgetting anyone? Oh, yes, Meredith Drum.
Well, I think
Drum.
Elena, I mean, we talked about her, but not in terms of the work that she has in the show and her beautiful pieces.
Okay. Well, why didn't you say something about Elena?
Oh, I mean, I love her. Her pieces are called On Letters and Symbols, Pattern Recognition, Comfort Consort, and they're hanging in the window. And I mean, the detail of her work and the patterns that she has in it and the materials that she uses. I just kind of, my husband and I are here today, and we were just kind of, I mean, just, we couldn't take our eyes off of it. It's very beautiful, and it's very, I'm about labor. I do a lot of labor with my work, and I could see the labor and the details of what she's doing. And I was just in awe.
The perfection of the patterns that she makes with her needle. And I think she did do some embroidery, but when she first came to the group in 2022, she was like, I'm a digital artist. I only do digital graphics. That's what I do. And through the course of this group, she's made her own dyes. She's, you know, spun things. The sticks that they're hanging on,
yes,
are carved from reeds that she stalks, I guess you'd call them stalks, that she stripped from her yard and reclaimed and dried and went through a process. And they're spotless. They're like exquisite. And she makes, she's been very, she made the graphics for the show as well. And the graphics are exquisite and beautiful, but she's found this kind of other like explosion of expression for herself. And it's really amazing. And Meredith Drum, who works in AR and VR, has a piece that it's very, you might miss it. It's very small. It's a QR code, but it's called Vulture Mothers. But it puts these, if you scan it with your phone, it puts these amazing orange vultures, these like phoenix vultures, into the space. And my piece is in the vault and it's called The Algorithm Knows You Better Than You Know Yourself. And it is made out of mirrors and a video called Never Ending Sea of Opportunity that I made long ago in a supermarket in Greenpoint that I have now processed into something else. It was a documentary. And these plaster casts that I made out of recyclables. So they're like these consumer objects that have been deprived of their identity and covered in dust. Mm. They're naked. Is that obscenity? No.
So before we wrap up now, so remind our listeners where they can attend this exhibition and quickly what other events you have.
Yes, we have, it's at 258 Main Street. We are next to Sauger Tales and Sage Greens, the beautiful new juice bar, but we are right on Main Street. And we, I'm sorry about that. That was a mistake. But 258 Main Street. We have also wanted to activate the space by experimenting with ideas of community and what's possible since we're a pop-up. So we've invited some friends, Music for Furniture, which we might say is the house band at Joust Cafe. But they are also very big fans of Pattern Recognition, the novel, and they will be performing on Thursday at 6 in the space. I don't know what they're going to do. It sounds very interesting. And then on Saturday, the 26th, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Marianne Chanin, who is a member of the collective, will be doing some text reading but then she will be improvising with Bradford Reed and Rhys Tevis and on the Pensolina and
love
the trombone.
Love the Pensolina.
The Pensolina, you know, there you are. Yeah. And yeah. I love the idea that they're going to be, that improvisation is a form of, this was Bradford's argument, is that improvisation is a form of pattern recognition and disruption. Mm. And I thought that was really cool.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Abigail, and thank you so much, Yvonne, for this conversation. Really looking forward to seeing the exhibition.
Thank you, Meredith.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
This is Meredith Cooey, and you just heard a conversation I recorded with Abigail Simon and Yvonne Short of the Solstice Sisters Collective. Their pop-up exhibition, Apophenia, is on view at 258 Main Street in Saugerties until Sunday, July 27th. On Thursday, July 24th at 6 p.m., local music group Music for Furniture will play in the space with food by the chef Kate Ray. On Saturday, July 26th from 4 to 6 p.m., Marianne Shanine reads Flowerbots and Artificial Moons, followed by Bradford Reed on his instrument the Pensolina and Rhys Tivey on trumpet. And the closing party is on Sunday, July 27th from 4 to 6 p.m. More information can be found on their Instagram page at apophenia_saug.